This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Quite some time ago, that we should always get out on the other side of the car. And that night, he got out on the driver's side with an arm full of T-shirts that said, Jim Crow must go. And that bullet struck him in his back, ricocheted throughout his chest. And he lasted 30 minutes after that, and the doctor said they didn't know how he did. But he was determined to live. The good thing, his body's not here, but he still lives. And I'm very happy, proud, and pleased to have played a part in making that come true.
Merle Evers, 50 years ago today, June 12, 1963. Her husband, the civil rights leader Medgar Evers, 37 years old, was assassinated in his driveway in Jackson, Mississippi. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Felsar and Mate, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzdra, Amy Littlefield, Martinez, DeRose, Nima Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper. Last week, Columbia Riverkeeper and allies filed a Clean Water Act lawsuit to stop toxic coal discharges from trains into Northwest waterways. We're going to talk about that. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday night at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, hosting its 29th annual anniversary celebration, June 14th through June 23rd. Specializing in 100% natural fiber clothing, Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com or fullcircleresaleportland.com.
It's 8:04 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today we're talking about coal exports, right? Global warming and our local communities with our guest, the Columbia Riverkeeper, Dan Sears. Dan, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dan, there's a lot of stuff happening with the coal issue right now. And listeners, this is one that you know, sometimes we have guests where it sounds kind of tiresome, but we want you to make friends with your state and local legislators to be able to lobby them directly about what you want to see in your community. And this coal issue is big time like that. So Dan, talk a little bit about what's happening with the coal.
Absolutely. So many KBOO listeners are aware that there are multiple proposals to ship millions of tons of coal through the Pacific Northwest, take coal out of the Powder River Basin, to put it on trains, and then to send it on ocean-going ships to Asia. To put this in sort of scale, the entire state of Oregon burns about 3 million tons of coal per year at Boardman, a plant that's slated to shut down in 2021 or 2022, somewhere in there. And the proposals to export coal are on the order of 100 million tons of coal per year. So you can sort of imagine taking one small step forward and shutting down Boardman and taking dozens of steps back and just allowing this coal to flow to Asia. And so we're very concerned about this. And in the next month, DEQ is going to be holding a big hearing here in Portland. We're encouraging people to go to that. And there'll be more hearings coming up soon about the very large coal export proposal in Longview, likely in the late summer or fall.
And, you know, I want to toss in something on the table, too. Yesterday afternoon, I got a press release from the Jubitz Foundation, the Jubitz family that runs the Jubitz truck stop. You're like, why do I care about the truck stop? The Jubitz family is awesome. So their foundation yesterday announced that they were disinvesting from fossil fuels, which I find amazing. Here is a family that made its money from what? Trucking, truck stops. You're aware of that already. Talk a little. That means something. People really are stepping up on this issue of the coal.
Yeah. What's remarkable is to see, you know, the Northwest and, you know, this disinvestment campaign has been really outstanding to see cities, the Jubitz Foundation, others, you know, take it very seriously and disengage from the fossil fuel industry as much as possible. So all this effort that's going into, you know, steering away from the dirtiest fossil fuel on the planet, coal, you know, right neck and neck with tar sands, oil, all that effort is essentially voided if we allow the Columbia River to become a super highway for dirty fossil fuels headed overseas to high-priced Asian markets. And that goes for liquefied natural gas, for coal exports, for oil exports, potentially in the future for tar sands oil. So we're very, very concerned that the Columbia River is being viewed as kind of this coal chute right now. And you know, frankly, we think we can do better than that.
Now,
and we are.
When we say that the Columbia River is being viewed as a coal chute, by whom?
By the coal industry. Arch Coal, Peabody Coal, and, you know, their partners in the rail industry, Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, owned by Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett. They're the folks who have, you know, already been moving coal along the Columbia River Gorge and spilling coal into the Columbia River already. And they're the people who really want to ramp up coal exports. There's another company, an Australian company called Amber Energy, which is the subject of the hearing coming up on July 9th with DEQ. And they are the proponent of what's been called the barging proposal to take coal by train to Boardman to the tune of about 8.8 million tons of coal per year, and then to barge that coal down past Portland to Port Westward, which is an area near Clatskanie in Columbia County, and then to send it overseas on ocean-going ships.
And here's the other thing that strikes me. If you pull the camera back, you can see that all through the Pacific Northwest, local governments have been having votes on whether they support these coal things. But what is so remarkable about it, when I hear Peabody Coal Company, I think of what, the open pit mines, right? Are they in Tennessee?
They're all over.
Wyoming also mm-hmm. has these open pit mines. I can't speak to whether Peabody runs them, but these corporations are dealing in the desperate poverty and joblessness of local communities. So they are literally ramming through these things in places where they know there are people who are desperate for jobs. And so then they throw down this jobs card. We're going to create jobs. Mm-hmm. And can you just speak to that? We do have a couple callers, but can you speak to that? Is there really a job return, and what kind of jobs? What do these jobs do to people's communities if they do materialize? I don't know if you could speak to that or not.
Absolutely. You know, we think that if you look at a community, let's say like Longview, Washington, where Amber Energy, the same company that's proposing the barge proposal in Oregon, is proposing a 44 million ton coal export facility in Longview. That would involve literally 8 full trains, 8 empty trains a day, bisecting that community and blocking all the main intersections in town. It's almost hard to imagine something that would be more disruptive to the local economy of that town. So when you look at the jobs picture, it's really important not to take Amber's jobs numbers on their face and to look at the jobs that would be lost, the jobs that would be damaged by a community that is has a traffic infrastructure disrupted, has emergency responders that can't reach, you know, key facilities like nursing homes and hospitals, and has the stigma of becoming a coal town, mm-hmm. Which is a disincentive to other cleaner industries moving in. And so the jobs versus jobs debate is one that's happening and very alive, you know, downriver from Portland in Columbia County and in Cowlitz County, Washington.
Right. And also when we're talking about Longview, we're thinking about their fragile ecosystem out there, their marine ecosystem, those wonderful shellfish. I love it out there. And they're already suffering. They're already having some problems with that. I can't remember what the issue was, a little bit of disease or something in their mussel beds. But you can't have coal without having pollution. You just can't. There's no such clean, green natural gas is what, you know, that woman that ran for president. Anyway, talking about it's a myth. You can't have that.
Yeah, and you know, I think you point to something that's really important, which is, you know, coal exports isn't the only fossil fuel industry knocking on the Columbia River's door, trying to establish that fossil fuel chute to Asia. Liquefied natural gas is also being proposed for export, and so you're talking about taking fracked gas out of the Mountain West and shipping that out. But really, you know, what's coming up, what's on the front burner for people here in the Portland area, is the coal export issue, and you know. LNG will be an issue that will also emerge here in the coming months.
Yeah, it already has. And we're just some few years ago, I feel as though the proposed LNG terminal that was going to be in Rainier area, where was that? Rainier? People, there was a massive outcry against that. And so listeners, we are talking about coal exports. We're talking about fossil fuels. Are you organizing around fossil fuels? Call us with your project so we can get behind it, or questions you may have about how to. Sometimes with this particular issue, I go fracking right in our area, Peabody right in our area. It's like you stay and you do your thing and the nightmare comes to you in a way. So that number to call, 503-231-8187. And we're going to go to the phone lines. Marie, is that right? We have you, Marie?
Yes, good morning, Lisa, and good morning, guest Dan Sears, and you all are wonderful for this crucial and vital topic. And I have been very active with the Sierra Club work out of the Columbia Gorge. I'm only a volunteer, but quickly I'll give a website and then I'll quickly tell my part. And the website is Oregon, D-E-Q, Coal, C-O-A-L, Oregon, D-E-Q, Coal. That gives a lot of detailed, updated information.
Is that .org or .com?
I don't have it here, but
okay, go ahead.
It'll come up.
Okay.
And also, just one more specific. The focus in that, the links in that, are the Coyote Island, which is out in the Boardman area, Amber Energy. That's the new issue coming up. So talking about that directly, Boardman, the new issue is that they do want to be trying to focus on barging coal down the river. And I was at meetings where we asked them, what is your fire plan if there is sparked a forest fire? They said their fire plan is that they would have to wait for a Coast Guard ship from the ocean to come down to the river to put out the fire. So basically they have to let the fire burn out. I think the fire issue alone is horrendous. And as we get into July and August, people might get hotter on that. And then one more point that I wanted to make is that I'm begging and urging Cable Radio to do additional in-depth program on this coal issue with the mercury issue. There's a lot of information. And just to quickly highlight that, where I live, there are many, many orchardists, many poor Hispanic, monolingual sometimes men, not bilingual, doing orchard work. They have a high exposure to mercury because there's mercury in the spray. And many people do not understand that the doubling and tripling of mercury in our air and the mercury coming through on coal really affects the particle count, really affects the asthma rate. So I'm praying and urging KBOO to do an additional program on the mercury ramifications of coal trains.
Thank you for that suggestion. Thanks for calling. We have another caller, but did you want to respond to that at all?
Yeah, on two things. First, the hearing that's coming up on Tuesday, July 9th, is really important. And so Amber Energy is proposing this idea of training coal to boardmen at what they're calling the Coyote Island Terminal, and then barging that coal down to Port Westward. What's really important about that hearing is to get the message across to the Department of Environmental Quality that we want them to use their power to stop this project. And to send that message very clearly, whether it's with the air permit or whether it's with the Clean Water Act, and looking at the entire project. It's very important that people convey to DEQ that this is not the future for the Columbia we want. And on the mercury issue, she's exactly right. Coal is a major source of mercury. Burning coal anywhere in the world results in mercury being deposited in the Columbia River system. And as you go up the food chain, in the Columbia River system, you see higher and higher levels of mercury accumulating in fish tissues. The people who eat the most fish are obviously, you know, the tribes on the river, and poorer folks. You know, you can go out on any given afternoon up in the Columbia Slough, you know, go to Kelly Point Park, and you see people fishing and eating those fish out of the river. So it's not just salmon. It's also, you know, the warm water fish that people eat for protein. So we're very concerned about the idea that we're going to be loading more mercury into the Columbia River system. And it doesn't just come from burning the coal. It's also the coal that's spilling off these trains, which was the subject of a Clean Water Act lawsuit filed last week.
Talk a little bit more about that lawsuit.
Yeah, basically what's happening is, you know, these coal trains rumbling down the Columbia River Gorge, the tune of, you know, roughly three or four a day, are already spilling large amounts of coal. What's fascinating about this is that the numbers of how much coal is lost per car and for a 130-car train come from BNSF itself. So BNSF and coal shippers, the people using the coal and shipping the coal, got in a lawsuit, got in a challenge with each other, and were debating in front of the Surface Transportation Board about how much coal was being lost. So our numbers actually come from BNSF, which is ironic, to say the least.
Possibly understated.
Yeah, possibly understated. And even taking the most conservative estimates, they're losing up to 240,000 pounds of coal per train. Right now with these four trains rumbling down the gorge. If you add up all the coal dust that's lost, it comes off the top in the form of dust and chunks. It comes out the sides and the bottom where they have weep holes, which is, you know, they don't want these cars to be watertight so that they can drain the water. And with that water moving out, you see coal. So, you know, there's a great video on ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org, and Riverkeeper, along with our great partners at Sierra Club, Friends of the Gorge, and other groups, stepped up and said, look, you know, we're finding coal in the river right now. It doesn't take very long. You put out a white bucket next to a coal, you know, a bridge going over a little tributary coming into the Columbia, and guess what you catch? You catch coal. It doesn't, you know, it takes a week or 2 weeks, and you start finding coal building up. So already they've spilled a lot of coal in the river. It wasn't a problem that we were as acutely aware of until we started thinking about what's going to happen when there are literally, you know, 20 coal trains a day going down the Columbia River Gorge. You know, so starting to ramp up this coal train traffic will have a very serious polluting impact. And, you know, this coal that's coming off these trains, this is a toxic substance. It has mercury, it has lead, it has arsenic, it has polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. These are substances that if you or I were just to go and dump them in the Columbia River,
We'd get fined.
We would be liable for a violation of the Clean Water Act. Mm-hmm. We have this great tool. It's called the Clean Water Act. And it allows citizen groups like Riverkeeper and Sierra Club and Friends of the Columbia River Gorge and other groups in Washington to step up and say, you know, we deserve clean water. We deserve a river that's fishable and drinkable and swimmable. And people do drink the Columbia River. You know, if you go down to Columbia County, Rainier, where these barges would be moving through and potentially even tied up on their way down the river, you know, the drinking water source is right there next to the shipping channel. And so we're going to use this tool, and we're going to hold BNSF and the coal industry accountable.
Dan, my head is snapping off. Okay, this is, and I'm so glad you're here today. It's a huge, crucial issue. We've got a full slate of callers. We're live in the studio, Studio 2, with Dan Sears. He is the Columbia Riverkeeper. We are talking about a lot of stuff that's been on the table lately about coal exports. I believe that the Beaverton City Council is slated to vote June 18th here, according to the story in the OregonLive.com. And I can say Oregon if I want to, because I've lived here long enough. Anyway, a little later, I want to talk about this crazy event that I just got back from. I traveled to Baku, Azerbaijan, which is next to Iran, and they are a major United States ally in the petrochemical industry. And I want to talk just a little bit about things that I saw at this conference and the fact that here in Baku, which is a gorgeous town, it's an ancient town, there's oil refineries all over it, even more so than Long Beach, California. And at night, they even put shiny colored lights on them so that they look pretty, but everybody lives with the fact that is it the Caspian Sea? There is, it's an oil sludge. And there's a beautiful boardwalk, but you can't go into the water anywhere near the water. And it never ceases to amaze me, Dan. These petrochemical corporations are so freaking sloppy with their product. Okay, it's like, why don't you put a lid on the damn train? You know what I'm saying? Is it brain surgery? It's like, how much does that pencil out even? If you were just going to look at it from an MBA, Masters in Business Administration perspective, like, how much are they wasting? They don't really care. And here at this place that I went to, Baku, and it goes back to the former Soviet Union. Baku, at the turn of the past century, like around 1900, it provided most of the world's oil. This one place, this one country, one of the most polluted places on earth, because the people that really control it don't live anywhere near where this pollution's taking place. And they don't care. They really don't. There's just so much money involved. And let's go to the phone lines. Randy's on the phone. Randy, what, Randy? I'm just overwhelmed right now with all these issues. What are you thinking about, Randy?
Well, two things. First, just as an aside, Lars Larson has thoroughly debunked that idea that tons of coal is falling off the train car. But what I really wanted to ask is the environmental left is against mining, coal, natural gas, fracking, oil, logging, fluoride, cars in general, on and on. Is there any natural resources-based industry that the left will not oppose or does not oppose?
Randy puts a tough one on the table. Thanks for calling, Randy. I just want to, right off the top of my head, say I've told you a million times not to exaggerate. And I think that what people maybe who are critical of these industries are really all about is that there need to be safeguards, right? There needs to be some kind of middle ground. You know, human beings in general, that we have a wide spectrum of what we think. And Lars Larson debunking something is a laugh riot, as far as I'm concerned. God bless your heart for bringing that up. But I just want to say, Randy, when it comes to actual pollution, when it comes to the asthma rates, Randy, I mean, how many people in this country die of cancer every year? I think that there are some people that might just have reasonable, moderate ideas on how to protect consumers and local residents from the obvious and predictable byproducts of a toxic industry. Dan, did you want to talk to that?
Sure. I think that, you know, the idea that it's a, you know, that it's just the left that's raising this issue is not true.
The Tea Party's getting on board with this one, too, in some ways. Keep going.
Well, the Power Past Coal Coalition is, you know, dozens of groups, including many businesses, who see coal exports as a threat, not just to the environment. And I unabashedly am concerned about coal dust getting into the Columbia River because people drink that water.
And you've seen it. It's your job.
And, yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to apologize for that. And
I wonder how much time Lars Larson has spent by the water. I bet he has spent some, but go ahead.
And he should talk to BNSF because it's their numbers, again, that we're using, and which is fascinating to me personally. But, you know, it's also businesses. It's folks in Columbia County who were looking at the Highway 30 corridor and imagining their business being corked off by, you know, a dozen coal trains a day from getting to Highway 30. You know, the ability to move their product to market, the ability of people to access their business. There's, you know, people down, farmers, and these are not, you know, radical leftists. down in Klaskanai, who are farming next to this proposed expansion of the Port Westward industrial area, what they see is a future of high-value crops, berries, mint, other crops that they could grow. You go up the Columbia River Gorge, and you see, you know, wineries right next to these proposed coal tracks. And the mantra that's come out in places like Longview and Columbia County and Scappoose, St. Helens, even Klaskanai, is we can do better. And that's the future we're looking towards. It's something that that actually builds the community rather than just another, you know, basically another strip mine, you know,
right.
A mobile strip mine moving down the Columbia River. That's not the future we envision.
Right. Randy, I just climbed right up Randy's tailpipe. Randy, I don't totally mean to mock Lars Larson, but I do a little bit, because if he was here, he would expect me to mock him. He's actually kind of a cool guy in a lot of ways. But Randy, seriously, I think that what people are looking for is some balance and a sense that local citizens can have some level of control over the industries that are shoved down our throats.
And the other piece of this that's fascinating is, you know, our energy decisions, what we decide to do, whether it's, you know, moving away from coal, whether it's, you know, fracking gas or not, those become a red herring in many ways if we just open up the Columbia River to become a huge fossil fuel export highway. In some ways, it's kind of abdicating our responsibility to make good energy decisions by just allowing ourselves to become a trafficker of the dirtiest fossil fuels to the world.
Because we actually, our local communities, I think that you'll find that we don't get quite as much from these industries as maybe we are sold on the front side. And let's go back to the phone lines. The number to call, 503-231-8187. We got Harvey on the phone. Harvey, what's going on?
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Dan. Great show. Well, it's a small world after all, and everything is connected. And I'm looking at a headline: unusual massive line of storms aimed at the Midwest. A gigantic line of powerful thunderstorms could affect 1 in 5 Americans on Wednesdays. It rumbles from Iowa to Maryland, packing hail, lightning, and tree-topping winds. You know, the coal, all of that affects the storms around the planet. As the planet heats up, as there's more and more evaporation of water into the atmosphere, bigger tornadoes, bigger hurricanes, bigger storms. I mean, one place affects the other. It is a small world after all. And I feel that the corporate elite, they think of us as the little people. One of the BP executives, I remember him saying that when asked about what they're going to do about all the people who are affected by the BP oil spill. He said, "Don't worry, we're going to take care of the little people." So they think of us as ants to be pushed aside, and that's why it's so important that we fight this power elite before they destroy our planet. And I think, once again, it's time to get star-powered. Let's get solar, and I want to thank you both, Lisa and Dan, for your fight, because we're fighting for our planet here. This is it. It is a small world after all.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome, Harvey. And I kind of keep coming back to Randy, because Randy is like, he's like my relative, right? Actually, you're not physically related to me, Randy, but people in my family have the same view as you. And so I don't want to let you go, because Randy puts his fingers on some important issues, and it goes back to the pogo effect. You know, we have met the enemy and it is us. You know, part of the thing that's happening here is I think that citizens want to know that there is a cleaner future, a better future for the kids, right? And when we throw all of our spaghetti at the wall of fossil fuels, we don't even know what other technologies for energy we're not even looking into. We don't hear about those because, Randy, this is the thing. This is the bedrock thing. Harvey just touched on it. The multinational corporations that control these fossil fuels, they don't give a damn about us. They don't give a damn about the planet. And I'm telling you right now, everywhere I've been, I just got back from Azerbaijan. I was in Istanbul as well. Turkey does not have any kinds of fuel industry at all. But I'm just saying, everywhere you look where there is fuel exports going on, there's dictators. So we're here inside the bubble of the United States of America, right? Well, we know we're not a dictatorship, right? Anyway, that's just something to think about. We have more people on the phone. Let's go back to those phone lines. Magical engineering pixies running around. I'm sorry, Bart. Bart, is that you? Bart, what's going on? Barth.
Well,
awesome.
I've got a quick one, which I think is a pretty good hit out of the park. I spoke to a guy in Vancouver who's formerly the head of car construction for one of the larger Midwest railroad chains. He ran their yard and refurbished boxcars and freight cars as a living for several years. And he found that with coal exports from the Midwest, they were building the cars out of conventional steel, and that their lifespan of the cars was something like 6 years because of the sulfur in the coal and the rain or snow falling onto the coal. It would leach out the sulfur and make sulfuric acid, so it would burn holes through the cars, and the cars would rot out, you know, just like cars in the Midwest where they put salt on the roads. So the problem, he went to the bosses and said, well, this is what we need to do. We need to build these cars out of stainless steel. And they're saying, oh, you know, what do you want, my firstborn? Because this is so expensive. And he explained to them that they would last, you know, 3 or 4 years longer, and so they would more than pay for themselves. So they were happy to do this. But if you extrapolate the leaching of sulfur by water from coal, he said that in some studies that perhaps the railroad was involved with, but which he seemed to know about, that salmon smolts tend to live in the shallower water right beside the bank in the weeds and rushes if they can, because they can't deal with heavy current. And if you have a coal train rumbling by and sprinkling off these literally tons of powder and chunks per mile, if you get a train that's 3 miles long, which is what they're planning, the water near the shoreline becomes heavily acidic to the point that it will melt the gills of salmon smolts, and they will be destroyed. So if you have a direct threat to an endangered species, it seems to me that's a pretty categorical no for increased volume.
Even I would even take it a few steps farther for people who don't care about endangered species. You know, years ago we did this thing with the spotted owl, right, up here in the Pacific Northwest. And the point of the spotted owl is that it was an indicator species. It's the thermometer in Mother Nature's throat. If we sit by and go, oh, no, you know, I don't really care about baby salmon. I care about my brother getting a job in the mines or whatever. The thing is, we all ingest that. We get it, right? Anyway, Randy, I'm putting that on the Randy list too. I love you, Randy, by the way.
For the Randy list, you know, yes, your concerns are valid.
Yeah.
People need work. There are things that we can't do without energy. All of those are true. Extractive industries, by and large, are much more harmful in the broad sphere than they are beneficial. But it's got to come from somewhere. Now, if we were doing the energy conservation thing from the top, where everybody's house would have a paid person come and examine the house and figure out what it needed to be weather tight and breeze free and so that it would be cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter, you know, insulate it and put better
windows in. We got it.
All those things pay money. All those things support your local economy. They put your neighbors to work, making it happen, providing the stuff, moving it around, providing lunches and stuff for the people they're putting it in. All of that is the ripple effect, and it's local. If you say, oh, well, we need these huge corporations to go pay pennies on the dollar at the extractive end,
and that is what they do, too.
Add all those, you know, quarters and dimes up the chain of the executives so that the top guy is earning $300 million a year and, you know, the guy that's doing this stuff is making minimum wage, or he's making $20 an hour, making $25 an hour.
I got it, Barth. Barth is shaking down the actual economics of how this works. I just spent some time on this trip, and thanks for calling, Barth.
You bet.
Just spent some time on this trip with a whole bunch of state legislators from all over the West, actually, and folks from Wyoming. It's like it was an eye-opener to see how those coal mines work, because the coal mines have an impact on the school completion rate. And what one legislator was telling me was that a lot of teenage boys quit high school. They don't get their high school degree because they can get a $20 an hour job in the mine. Like Barth said, that seems like a lot of money to a 17-year-old person. Within 10 years, they can't do that work anymore because they may have cancer. They have physical problems. My ancestors are from Tennessee. My grandfather died really young because of the work itself. So there's all of these unintended consequences. So they have a whole generation of young people that dropped out of school. Now they're 35 years old. They can't work at the mines anymore and they're unemployed. And so people are looking around and going, what the heck are we going to do now? So it's like the unintended consequences of setting up an extractive industry, which actually, as Barth said, they do pay pennies on the dollar at the extraction end. Mm-hmm. And the money accrues and accumulates when it's sent to Asia, right? And then it's turned into something that's sold back to us often. Dan, you're going to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things this points to is, you know, who are being asked to trust here? We're being asked to trust the coal industry with the health of the Columbia River. Already we're finding that they're spilling the stuff into the river.
And denying it.
And yeah, of course they're denying it. Yeah. And then you've got a company like Amber Energy, based in Australia, who, you know, set up a company that it could sell its coal to, a subsidiary of its own, of itself, Amber Energy, to avoid paying the higher royalties that would be required if it were selling directly to Asia. Senator Wyden has asked for an investigation into this. And just yesterday, the Department of the Interior concluded that that in fact they were selling coal at below market rates off our public lands. So one of the things we can do is to impress upon the federal government that we need to stop subsidizing the coal industry. One of the ways we can do that by not allowing them to dump illegally toxic coal into our rivers. We can actually charge what the coal is worth. We can make sure that they pay the royalties that are required. And we can just stop all that short by, you know, as a state of Oregon, rejecting coal exports. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the really important people in this whole picture, regardless of what the federal government does, is our governor, John Kitzhaber. And is he going to stand up to the coal industry? Is he going to allow these projects to move forward? Are his agencies going to use the authority that's available to them to stop coal exports? And one of those big areas is this Clean Air Act permit that they're required to get. And then there's the bigger question of the Clean Water Act and how would they comply with that? And so we're really urging, folks today who are listening to KBOO to call the governor and to urge him to step up and to stop coal exports.
Yeah, and I do want to say, Barth brought this up, this issue of instead of focusing on extractive industries, what would happen if we actually focused on becoming more energy efficient in our own local economies? That is, I'm not a gigantic Kitzhaber fan, but he has actually done that. And he rolled that out as a campaign kind of promisey thing to actually help bolster school spending. He's talking about helping schools, systems all over the state save money and by literally weatherizing their facilities. He also here in the Portland area, the EcoTrust, right? EcoTrust set up an energy system. Thank you. An energy system where they did exactly what Barth was suggesting. And they did it with I feel as though it was a stimulus act grant. 3 or 4 years ago, they set up this program where local contractors would go to your home, they'd suss out your home for energy efficiency, and they contracted with an array of local small construction-related businesses, maximizing the number of businesses of color and businesses, non-traditional businesses that were participating with that. I can't think of what the name of the program was, but it was rolled out to the whole state. That is actually happening. And I think that it's just so interesting, our mindset, though, in this country. Politically, some people are like, no, it's our right to dig whatever we want out of the dirt and la-di-da-di-da. But the corporate sector gets their hands on that, and they do not let go. And the local community doesn't get the benefits that they should.
You know, and one of the things, again, to come back to this, is the idea of becoming a huge trafficker of coal to the Pacific Rim, it undercuts all of that great work, all of the progress. I mean, there are people investing heavily in a cleaner energy future here in the Pacific Northwest. We've made a decision to shut down these two coal plants in Boardman and Centralia.
We shut down the nuke plants too.
Yeah, I mean, we're working hard to try to get to move in a different direction, to become this huge gateway for dirty coal from the Powder River Basin to be shipped and burned in, you know, massive coal-fired power plants in Asia, it's beyond counterintuitive. It actively undercuts and voids all the work that is being done in the clean energy sector. And so that's why we see this as really a critical point. You know, living on the Columbia River, it's a blessing and a curse. It's a beautiful river. We have salmon. We have, we have this opportunity to make a real impact on the future of energy and how it's used by stopping coal exports. It's also a curse in that every dirty fossil fuel industry in Western North America is looking at the Columbia River to become a gateway, a money-making gateway to push their product, their climate-changing, global warming product on the world. So it's up to us to show up to places like the hearing on July 9th with DEQ and impress upon them that this is too important to take a narrow view.
Dude, this is a bare-knuckle fight right here, right now, in our own community against these gigantic multinational corporations. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Joanne on the phone. Joanne, what's going on?
Well, I have a daughter in her 50s and using inhalers as an essence, her ex-marriage to her husband, and she told me something that happened to her a couple of weeks ago. She couldn't breathe. And she almost died, and she went to the emergency room and that, and all I did was tests, and she had to get some medication from a friend. You know why I'm calling? I wouldn't bother, because I got a lot of pain in my body, as usual. Because of people like Randy. I don't like people like Randy. I'm being very nice, Lisa, and I shouldn't. All freedom of speech has been damaged, even at K-Boo.
All right. She's putting the tough one on the table. Joanne, it's like, how do we tolerate the people who don't agree with us? She's also bringing up that issue of asthma. People who have asthma right now, asthma can kill you right now. So when we're talking about coal dust, which so I gather some people don't believe that there really is any. So they're thinking it's fairy dust. That stuff can kill people right now. And if we're talking about putting another medical, what's the word I'm looking for, burden on poor communities, I'm looking at you, Dan Sears, Columbia River people. People are going to die. I don't think that that's an exaggeration.
No, it isn't. I mean, you can look at a community like Longview, mm-hmm. and there you see very high rates of COPD, very high rates of asthma. Some of the poorest air quality at times in the state of Washington is right there in Longview. You see very high rates of, juvenile respiratory illness. And those are huge concerns. And Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility has been sort of at the forefront of calling for a health impact assessment. So along with what the whole coalition has been calling for in terms of an environmental impact statement, looking at all the environmental impacts of this project, we are also calling for health impact analysis, which looks at these issues of how much coal dust, and it's not just the coal dust, it's also the diesel fumes, the particulate matter that comes from burning diesel in all of these communities.
The whole enchilada.
How will that impact the area? And actually, Multnomah County did kind of a preliminary look at this and found that a very large percentage of people in Multnomah County live close to rail tracks that could be used for shipping coal. At that time, Kinder Morgan was still on the table down at Port Westward near Clatskanie. That project has since folded, at least for now. And so but there's still proposals up in Washington State that could involve routing coal trains through Oregon.
I also want to say really quickly, Joanne and also Randy, freedom of speech is when you can call up KBOO and say what you need to say on the air, and you just did that. Okay, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Paul Rowland, he's in the building, looks at the rise of the national security state and the abuse of surveillance and intelligence, air quotes, gathering with journalism professor Christopher Simpson and constitutional law professor Christopher Pyle. At 10 here, our Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, former FBI special agent and whistleblower Colleen Rowley on the origins of the NSA bugging scandal. Also, Norman Solomon talks about whistleblower Edward Snowden. And finally, a big victory in California for anti-nuclear activists. 11 on the Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert talk garden irrigation, tasks at hand in the June garden, honeyberries, and what's going on in the honeybee hive. Let's get down and talk about what's happening to the honeybees. talking about clean air and water. We are live in Studio 2 with Dan Sears. He is the Columbia Riverkeeper. We're talking about a number of fronts on the basically fight against massive coal exports from our region. Okay. The phone lines are open. We have talked about a number of ways where people can get active on this issue. We'll try to go over them again at the end of the hour. But listeners, are you organizing around fossil fuels? Call us with your project so we can get behind it. And I want to put something else out there. We had a contrary guy, Randy, call. I really value when people call KBOO who have conservative leanings and share those leanings on the show, because I don't like the echo chamber effect personally. But if anybody out there has their ideas for what you think are the best alternative fuels for the future, alternative energy technologies, we'd love to hear that from you too. I'm putting it out. Hot air. Okay. Anyway, get it? See what I did there? Okay. 503-231-8187. And let's go back to the phone line. Soraya,
yeah.
Yay. Thank you for calling. What's going on with you today?
Well, thank you. I live on the Vancouver side of the Columbia. And when we talk about Burlington, Northern Santa Fe, we need to talk about the unions. We're talking about Warren Buffett and who owns them. We need to talk about solidarity within an organized structure that's already there. Because the unions want sustainable jobs, and they want renewable energy. So let's talk to the guys who drive the trains and who build the tracks and stuff. You know, for the membership, it's all about the solidarity, and they want real jobs, too. So it just makes sense to me that you would say, all right, do you want your kids to be sick? Do you want yourself to be sick? You know, 100% higher cancer rates for people who work in the export plants. You know, really talk to them about the jobs.
Yeah, because it'll be their health that's on the line. Yeah. Do you know what unions are in?
Right. The Teamsters, to begin with, and the longshoremen. But the thing is, too, these jobs in Wyoming and Montana, where they're digging it out, those aren't union jobs. Why support them? You know, the people unloading it in China, those aren't union jobs. You want everybody to have a union job. And these, the mining fields out in Wyoming, those are horrible jobs. They treat their people like crap.
They throw them out. Yeah. All right. Soraya, thanks. She's bringing this up, a major issue. Like who are the allies around the table, and who should we be?
Well, plus, you know, if you're going to be out there laying it down, you want the people who drive the trains to know. You want them to know your face, you know?
All right. All right. Soraya, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
And we got another call. Mike is on the phone. What's going on, Mike?
Morning. I'm in Vancouver as well. Just so you know, yesterday morning I was heading to a job, and there, right there, 9:30, there was a mile-long coal train parked right there along the Columbia River there, heading west into Vancouver rail yard, BNSF Railroad, and then they head north. I love your imagery of the bucket underneath the bridge. That's collecting dust and gas and everything, and dead insects that happen to fall in it, for instance. We could also put out nets to see what kind of bugs are being affected and test them as well, and worms and stuff like that. But, if you want to invite city officials, county officials, environmental officials, and just the public and some tea partiers if they want, there's a public, Fish and Wild, National Fish and Wildlife Run Ridgefield Wildlife Refuge, right along that route going heading north. It's exit 14 off I-5. You head left to Ridgefield, and then north at the end of the road downtown Ridgefield. You go north, and there's a bridge, a walking bridge. And what it is a paths and wildlife viewing, and there's a native plank house that was built there by the Fish and Wildlife, and people can go there and not be kicked off because it's private land. And there's this beautiful arch bridge right over the railroad, and I've been on the bridge when the coal train goes under. It is toxic. It stings your nose. It stings your eyes. It's clear all day, every day. And those Fish and Wildlife folks and officials there on site, they know what's going on. They may be also doing testing on the effects of the wildlife all along Lake River, which runs right along there in the refuge, which is huge investment in protecting the wildlife of birds migrating, everything else, and fish. But if you can invite some groups to get on that bridge and feel it, you could have 1,000 people go up and over that bridge in, you know, in the time it takes, and just have someone, a spotter, letting people know ahead of time when the train's going to be up there. Anyway, that's my suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Mike called with some very concrete, this is where you go, this is what you see. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are live in Studio 2 with Dan Sears. He is the Columbia River Keeper. And we're talking about this issue of coal exports, which is really heating up. There's a lot of things going on. The Magical Engineering Pixie and his dog just brought in a note that the program that I was thinking of, that Barth was talking about, you know what we should do? We should weatherize this stuff and create local jobs. It's called Clean Energy Works Oregon at cleanenergyworksoregon.org. And it started out with Clean Energy Works Portland. I have to say, we got that at my house. And it costs real money. We're going to be paying it off for a long time. But our house is totally more comfortable than it was before. And we know more about the house. And we know that we're not pumping a bunch of natural gas, hot air, whatever, into big crawl spaces that's going nowhere. Again, it kind of, in a way, it comes back to what Mike was just talking about. Know your environment. You know, what are you doing with your own personal environment? You know, this issue of coal exports, we also mentioned liquefied natural gas terminal, which is again being brought back and recommended for what area?
Warrenton, Oregon, down near Astoria.
Yeah.
So it kind of falls under this broad category. You know, we've heard about potentially oil exports being ramped up, or oil shipments down the Columbia River. We've heard about coal exports. Liquefied natural gas was a brawl, a lot like coal exports, you know, several years ago, mm-hmm. when they were talking about bringing this stuff in, bringing in this super cooled natural gas on huge tankers. Now what they're talking about doing is taking that fracked gas out of Canada and out of the Rockies and shipping it in pipelines all the way down to Warrenton, and then super cooling it and sending it overseas. So it's something to keep on the horizon. Again, you know, the Columbia River, we view it as something more than just a fossil fuel superhighway for tankers of LNG or oil or coal. We think that we can do better than that, and we have to.
And we do have more phone calls, but I want to say this really quickly. It was yesterday, June 11th. So again, in the Oregonian yesterday was a story. Oregon LNG goes for federal license, says approval would override county opposition. It's something that Dan was talking to me about before the show. Backers of a proposed liquefied natural gas terminal near the mouth of the Columbia River have filed for a federal permit and say that approval would preempt opposition from Clatsop County, which has withdrawn land use approvals for the project's feeder pipeline. Randy, Clackamas County, not your hotbed. I'm sorry, Clatsop County, not your hotbed of radical left-wing thought. You're literally talking about people trying to control our own environment and what corporate garbage gets shoved down our throat. So let's go to the phone lines. Scott, what's going on with you?
Yeah, again, I just want to get back to Randy. Seems to be the topic of the hour, but what I'd like to put back to him, is there anything that scientists will say that Lars Larson isn't going to tell him to be against? And why is it that Lars and the Koch brothers seem to agree on everything? And why is it that we're against these extractive industries? You know, I've grown up in Oregon, and I can see that the salmon are on the brink of extinction. The grizzly bears are gone. The wolves are gone. The sea otters are gone. The beavers are largely gone. The spotted owls are largely gone. Why is it that we're against all this stuff? And why is it that we support science and that the authoritarian people don't? Why is it that the Koch brothers and Lars are always feeding us this line that we shouldn't believe scientists, we shouldn't believe our university professors, we should be against education? Mm-hmm. I can't stand, you know, my family's the same way as Randy, where they don't want to face the facts. And, you know, that's my comment. When will a scientific topic come up that they believe that Lars wants to convince them to be against?
Right on, Scott.
I assume, you know, I forget the name of the Riverkeeper representative, but I would guess that he's not making $1 billion off his profession.
No,
like
he's totally gold-plated. He drove up here in a Beamer. I'm just kidding. Thanks a lot for calling, Scott. I really want to appreciate it. We're starting to think about running out of show. And Scott's issue there, and I think that he's really right, is to follow the money. Where's the money going? And who's telling you what to pay attention to? You know, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain kind of a thing. Did you want to say something about that, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, the money goes to Arch Coal. You know, companies like that really don't have a stake here in this community. And Arch Coal is one of the main backers behind the huge proposal in Longview. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, there'll be hearings coming up on that project in the future. I think the caller really brought up a good point, which is, you know, we need to think about the future of the Columbia River and the future of the Northwest. And people have been doing that, and they've been working at trying to get to a place where we're not just, it's not just another clear cut. It's not just another coal mine. And those things, that progress that we're trying to make is, again, it's actively undercut by the idea of shipping coal overseas. And it's getting traction in places you wouldn't expect. It's getting traction in rural Oregon. In Columbia County, if you went to the hearings about whether or not to double the size of this proposed coal port at Port Westward, you know, it was a wide swath. You know, you had businesses, you had teachers, you had, you know, retirees who were concerned about their respiratory health, and you had farmers coming out and saying, absolutely not. You know, this is an area where we have great soil, some of the best soil in the county, and we object. We think that this shouldn't be industrialized. We think that this should be that, you know, agriculture has a real future in Oregon, mm-hmm. and it's a bedrock industry. It's a bedrock job creator for these rural communities. And, you know, having unit trains rumbling through these towns and having, you know, these big industrial developments that are dirty and that, you know, don't make good neighbors, you know, that's something we can say no to while saying yes to something very concrete and real.
And, you know, if you care about the tar sands, you care about the fracking, you care about the open pit coal mines in other parts of North America, this is our piece of that. This is our piece of that. So this is about your local community. And before the end of this hour, we're going to go through this list of all the ways that you can plug in, but we still have some more callers. So let's go back to the phone line. Mitch is on the phone. Mitch, what's going on?
Well, on the macro level, it might feel good, and keeping it local certainly has some strategic advantages in that right-wingers generally are, you know, their credo is that me first, you know, social Darwinism, and so you find allies, especially in the Northwest, on the rail routes from Portland, where ESCO manufactures the heavy equipment for the Alberta tar sands. People in the rural, on those rural truck routes, tend to be conservative because they're landowners, but they don't want ESCO trucks going through their two-lane roads because that's taken away the land value of their properties and the tourist value.
Yeah.
Now the other thing is that we could, if we do prioritize the local considerations there. On the macro level, look at what Australia is shipping to the same markets we want to get into on coal, and Australia is not cutting back on their coal exports to Asia. And so we're not doing a thing about reducing the amount of pollutants in the air or climate change because... Right. The Australians are just taking advantage of it.
All right. And thanks for calling. We are starting to run out of show. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to all the other callers. Let's go for one more caller. And then Pam, what's going on?
I just have a question for your riverkeeper, for Dan. And that is, what role do the Native Americans have in this struggle? And also, it kind of related to that is Idle No More, you know, doing anything with it. I know that started in Canada and it was about treaty rights. But
thanks. We're going to rip it and go to Pam and go to Dan. And I do want to say that I feel as though in Washington State, some confederation of tribal governments actually came out within the past couple months against the coal, but I don't have all those details at my fingertips. So go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. The tribes in Puget Sound and the Lummi Nation came out and was absolutely adamant in opposing that the proposal to ship 48 million tons of coal a year through Bellingham. On the Columbia River, you know, traditional fishing sites are impacted. The Amber project would involve a doubling of barges going down the Columbia River. That interferes with tribal fishing. And it's not just the fishing, the activity of fishing, it's the fish itself. It's the coal that's getting in the river and impacting our fishery.
Everybody. We're always looking at health disparities. So, Dan, we're running out of show. Let's go through the list of ways that people should be plugging in right now, KBOO listeners right now. Go for it.
Yeah, and you know, you can go to ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org or PowerPassCoal.org and find more information. But the big thing that's coming up is the July 9th hearing here in Portland at the Oregon Convention Center. There'll be a rally at 5:30 on Tuesday, July 9th. There are 2 6-hour sessions for comment and 30 registered speakers in each one. And the big message we want to get across to DEQ and the governor is use your power, exercise your authority, and say no to coal in the Northwest.
Right on. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Columbia Riverkeeper Dan Sears. Find out more at columbiariverkeeper.org. Also, check out this site called readthedirt.org. It's awesome. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Paul Roland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 in Corvallis now. It's 104.3 in Corvallis. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next on Political Perspectives, Paul Roland looks at the rise of the national security state and the abuse of surveillance and intelligence gathering with journalism professor Christopher Sampson and constitutional law professor Christopher Pyle.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.